This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Strong wind sends farmland dirt airborne, reducing visibility on I-55 in South Central Illinois, causing a chain reaction crash. At least six people have died, 30 injured. Ryan Starwick with the Illinois State Police says it was a spring version of a whiteout situation.
Nothing in my 24-year career that I can recall having something as severe as this.
KMOTV's Caroline Hecker at the scene, about 70 miles north of St. Louis.
I can tell you that you can still clearly see and feel the wind that caused this accident. They've been moving semis off the interstate. Injuries in this accident ranging from minor to life-threatening, with the victims as young as 2 and as old as 80. This portion of Interstate 55 shut down for at least the rest of the evening.
A gruesome discovery in Henrietta, Oklahoma during the search for two missing teenagers, local Sheriff Eddie Rice.
We searched the property and we've located seven bodies.
The state medical examiner will have to identify the victims. Earlier today, a missing endangered person advisory was issued after two teenagers were reportedly seen traveling with a convicted sex offender. The search intensifies for a Texas man who allegedly killed 5 of his neighbors Friday night after one of them complained about his firing of his gun near their house and keeping a baby awake. CBS's Janet Chamlian in Cleveland, Texas.
As the manhunt pushes into a third day, the FBI at its latest briefing saying Francisco Oropesa remains elusive.
We do not know where he is. We don't have any tips right now to where he may be.
The 38-year-old, a Mexican national who was deported and subsequently returned to the U.S. 4 times over the past 14 years, is accused of killing 5 people in a neighbor's home with an AR-15-style rifle.
The Treasury Secretary sends Congress a letter warning of a possible U.S. debt unless default unless lawmakers act to raise or suspend the debt ceiling over the next month. CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
The letter to Congress warns that the extraordinary measures the Treasury's undertaken to stave off default will run out sometime early next month, perhaps as soon as June 1st. Last week, the GOP-controlled House approved a debt ceiling increase in a bill that also includes spending cuts flatly rejected by the White House. Biden aides have insisted the president won't negotiate over an increase in the debt limit, but he has invited the top 4 congressional leaders here to the White House for talks on the matter next Tuesday.
President Biden kicks off Small Business Week with a message to small business owners after the government takeover of First Republic Bank and the sale to J.P. Morgan Chase.
These actions are going to make sure that the banking system is safe and sound, and that includes protecting small businesses across the country who need to make payroll for workers and their small businesses.
This is CBS News.
Find your next great hire with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, your personal injury attorneys with over 35 years of experience. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. 1 in 3 Wisconsin families tell the United Way they're struggling to pay for basic necessities. The report helps identify people who are above the poverty line but don't make enough money to cover the cost of living. State lawmakers are putting the finishing touches on an historic reworking of Wisconsin's shared revenue system. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says Republicans collaborated with Democrats and consulted Governor Evers.
I think this is an area that Wisconsinites should be proud of. People sat down at the table. We didn't always agree, but people of goodwill hopefully found a good conclusion at the end.
Voss was on WISN's Upfront program Sunday. 20% of the state sales tax would go to local governments, increasing shared revenue by 10%. In sports, the Packers are busy signing undrafted free agents now that the NFL college draft is over. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
You are listening.
Accidents can be life-changing. No matter who you are, no matter who
record high energy and water costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive. While you may not ask for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to be without heat, water, or power. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help. That's www.heat.help.
The SHA 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com. The SHA 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM. Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
Time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. First off, happy May Day. Yes, May Day, the International Workers' Day. I know we don't celebrate Labor Day in this country till September, the end of summer, when you know everything's going the other direction. The rest of the globe looks at May 1st as the International Workers' Day. And look, you know, here in this country, there was a reason they didn't choose May 1st as Labor Day, because you know May 1st was about empowering workers. It was about It was heaped in the blood of executed workers who were just demanding a reasonable workday. You know, back in the late 1880s, the average workday was sun up to sundown. You know, you could have 16-hour shifts, you know, being the norm 5, 6, 7 days a week. And workers under the banner of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will, struck for better conditions, better wages, better hours. Wages, hours, conditions. That's what people generally organize over. And this is our history. This is our labor history that's really never taught. I learned about none of this stuff in school. And we don't teach our children this stuff on purpose, because we don't want them to believe that they're, as a collective group, able to make better opportunities for themselves and others. We don't want working people to understand that they got power. And in every instance, that power has to be crushed. And you can go through our history. In fact, today I had a wonderful opportunity, because I spent my May at a Teamsters event here locally. That made it, quite possible for as workers organized, as things expanded, as opportunities expanded, corporate America, with the help of government, crushed it. And this being one of those moments, as the workers in 1886 were on this day, saying, look, we demand better. We demand an 8-hour workday. The powers to be would have none of it, and eventually instigated what was the Haymarket affair, the riot. Someone throws a bomb. Who knows who? People are injured. Police start firing into the crowd. People are killed, and they eventually arrest 8 people, the Chicago 8. 4 of them they execute, and in fact, one of them wasn't even there, but didn't matter. Did not matter, It opened up a couple of really interesting conversations for me today. And one of them being, as we talk about all the time, every day we're posed with these right-left scenarios. We're posed with, it's the red hat versus the blue hat. I guess because we understand the game. Everything is a horse race. Everything is a game. And it's posed to us in those terms. Critical thinking, finding common ground, that stuff is discouraged. It's rah-rah our team. And I happened to, as I was talking to someone, I remembered, the movie Hoffa. And I said, if you've ever seen the movie Hoffa, there's an incredible 30 seconds of film in there, and they did it on purpose. Because in the film, there's a scene with the bus strike in Cleveland back in the 30s, the RTA bus strike, where, Hoffa is leading all the workers into the courtyard area, into this giant, courtyard area. And, you see all the working people there with their wives and their children. You got reporters there. You've got all kinds of people, marching towards this company. And he's asked the question, are you expecting violence? And he says, I hope not. But, if it happens, we'll be prepared for it. And then it pans up to the window, the ivory tower, if you will. And there's the CEO. There are the corporate executives. There's the police chief, the local politicians. And they've all got their drinks in hand. And a very civil affair as they look down on the unwashed masses coming out and saying, hey, we demand better. We want better wages, hours, conditions, better opportunities for ourselves, our families. We want better communities. We want better. We demand better. And as they go back down to the crowd, you see the doors fly open, and out come the thugs, out come the hired muscle, out come the strike breakers, the scabs, out come the people who were brought there to beat these workers back into submission, to beat them back into their place. And at a certain point, it's just this jumble of this mass rumble of humanity. And at a certain point, you go, who's fighting who? They're literally just beating whoever's in front of them, and they're beating people bloody. They're hitting them with clubs, and then it goes back up to the ivory tower, up to the window where the CEO, the local politicians, the police chief are all standing down there watching, with their disapproving looks and their head shaking. And then they close the curtain. They turn their back and they go back to their evening. While all of this chaos is going down the bottom, all of this misery, all of this violence, the bloodshed, and they go back to their evening. And you go, this is not just 1930s in Cleveland. This happens every day. Now, do we have these kind of mass rumbles today? No, because our police would never allow that. We've got much better crowd control techniques today, thanks to Iraq and Afghanistan. But this is one of those moments where, which side are you on? And it comes back to that for me. And as I was having this conversation today, every one of these battles is not about right or left, red hat, blue hat. It's not about I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican. It's not about that. It's about which side are you on when it comes to the economic war that is going on right before us. To the fact that the war between labor and capital is always ongoing. And that capital uses our government against us always. And we're in this moment again. And this is where my frustration is, because, we're eating the outrage candy. We're angry at this group or that group. It's the immigrants. And look, that's not new. Not new. In fact, the Haymarket affair, as I go back and I spend a little time reading about it today and remembering some of the things I've read over the years, What came out of this Haymarket affair back in 1886 was widespread immigrant hatred. It's all these immigrants who are making things unlivable here by demanding that they get paid a wage that they can feed their children on, that they demand working conditions where they don't end up crippled or dead, where they demand to spend time with their families. How dare they? And you see a lot of this kind of the same hysteria thrown at us all the time. When it's, again, the person who's sitting in that ivory tower, the person, those people who are sitting up in that room looking down on us, the unwashed masses, the working poor. And what's happened in this country is we've made a lot of people really comfortable. Someone told me the other day, the average middle-class working person in this country is literally in the top 1% globally. And it's true. I mean, when you take in all of the billions of people on this planet, we're fortunate enough to be in that 1% of rarefied air globally. But here domestically, the average working person is struggling to keep up. Rents are going up. Cost of living's going up. Food, gas, all of this stuff going up. And why? Not because Joe Biden. Joe Biden is not the problem here. Although our political folks who want to make money off of it want us to believe that. It's all about the greed. I think about that French economist. It's greedflation. He's never seen anything like it in his lifetime. And you go, gee, never in your lifetime have you seen opportunists use a moment of crisis to their advantage? And this is where, understand, the idea of keeping us at each other's throats, still with the red hats and the blue hats. Our team has to win. And therefore, if our team has to win, your team has to lose. And we see this in every political decision. When was the last time you saw something that said, hey, we're going to help working people? We're going to help families do better. Especially coming out of our friends in the Republican Party. Because right now, whether you like it or not, they're the party who's attempting to undo the 20th century. They're the party that's attempting to tear down what was built by the greatest generation. And return us to those days of 1886. Return us to those days of poverty and desperation for working people. That means you and me. That means the people who would be down in that crowd, whatever side you would be on. Whether you're the strikers striking for better wages, hours, conditions, or the thugs who are just there to make a paycheck to beat them up. I think about the quote that's often attributed to Jay Gould. I could easily pay half of the working class to murder the other half. This is that moment. And as we see the strikes that are happening now and this resurgence of young people discovering what the labor movement is, discovering what solidarity is, discovering that they have power, we're seeing the moneyed interests doing everything they can do. And look, we're not going to tolerate as a country the kind of, or at least not yet, I still think it's going to happen at some point, but not yet, the kind of beatings that we saw back in the 30s and 40s. But we'll arrest people. We'll make their lives miserable because we're much more humane now. In the 1850s, 60s, 70s, into that era, we were shooting people who struck. And then we started beating them with clubs. So we went from bullets to billy clubs. Now we got people with briefcases. Still the same outcome. Crush worker power. Crush the ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. Put people in their place. Just more civilized. Want to hear your thoughts. It is May Day, the Workers International Workers Day. Want to hear your thoughts. How did you spend your May Day? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com to share that. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
John, listening at KTNF in Minnesota, wrote, I think you missed the point. Eisenhower, and this is brilliant, because, you know, as we were fighting for International Workers Day, you know, for Labor Day to be May 1st, he points out that Eisenhower, during his administration, declared May 1st as Law Day. And this is that, again, which side of the equation are you on? Are you on the side of the law and order and keeping people in their place, or allowing people the freedom, the real freedom, to do better, to fight for better? I love the fact that our Supreme Court is losing its mind on a whole bunch of cases and is moving us quickly back to an era where if you were hungry enough and desperate enough to work in poverty conditions for desperation wages, that was your liberty. It was liberty of contract. The Lochner era is what they called it. And it said, look, government can't do anything to make your life better. Sorry, you're on your own. And you can't do anything either, because all the power lies in the hands of the employer. And that was, you know, that's coming back. And the reason why it's important to remember the past, because the same things are going to happen, only with better technology. And I point to an article written by Josh Idelson over at Bloomberg that came out today that said, look, you know, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that the White House is looking at how companies are using AI information to manage and surveil their workforce, and how we're so far behind on all of this, that there are very few places that have even addressed it, let alone have protections for working people in place. And that the AI revolution that is going to sweep across this country in very devastating ways for working people, no one's talking about. You know why? Because we're worried about transgender stuff. We're worried about who's going to what bathroom. We're worried about what little book that little Johnny's not going to read in the library. We're fed this stuff. So again, that we're in that pit, that mass of humanity, that rumble of violence in humanity, of eating each other, half the working class, literally tearing the other half apart. And why? So that all of the things that make those people in that ivory tower more. You know, when Samuel Gompers, the founder of the American Federation of Labor, said, you know, what does labor want? He answered the question, we want more. We want more of more schools and less jailhouses. More of the things that make life worth living. More of the opportunities to lead our better lives and less of the things that tear us apart. We want more and better. Whereas our wealth class, our ivory tower folks, they just want more. More power, more control, more wealth, more to line their pockets with. And their insatiable appetite and greed and greed knows no bounds. So I look at what's going on here, and as Josh points out, there are a number of firms, Amazon being one of the big ones, who surveils basically everything that their workers do. Every keystroke, every rapid eye movement. You know, as someone who drives a truck for a living, there's technology out there right now. And it's been here for a while, that while you're working, it is recording literally every single thing that you do. Because we do this stuff on truck drivers first, because they're such a torn apart industry. Because we're hyper individual. We're the kings of the road. So we're easy to pick apart. Because there isn't really any unity. You know, the Knights of the Highway are no longer. We're now just a whole bunch of people willing to slit each other's throats for pennies. because that's what deregulation brought us. That's what breaking the unions brought us. That's what you're your own boss, hooray for you, and the heck with everyone else brought us. But there's technology out there that while you're out there being the king of the road, it's recording your eye movements. It's recording everything you do, how many times you touch the brake pedal, you know, what gear you're in, how fast you're going, you know, how many times you're how long you're out of gear, you name it, everything. And it's been going on for years. And it is now expanding into office work. It's now expanding into warehouse work. It's now expanding into every facet of our life. And it's only going to get worse because we're still fighting over the outrage candy. We're still fighting over the stuff that is being fed to us. Now, as Josh points out in his article, there's only a couple of places that have bothered to do anything. For instance, Amazon. The State House passed a bill requiring companies like Amazon to provide their workforce with any data collected on them. You know, that should be simple. We should have, and this is a much bigger question, how much data corporate America has on each and every one of us. Now, I was just talking to a friend the other day, and we were talking about some of the old movies from the 80s. And I think it was Blade Runner, where you walk down the street and every billboard, every window, shop window, everything was throwing advertisements at you specifically tailored for you. And how I remember at the time back in the 80s going, wow, that is incredibly dangerous. How do they know so much? How do they get all that? Well, we're not living it. Thank you, Google. You know, I Google something and 6 months later, I'm still seeing ads popping up going, hey, remember me? But we don't have control of our own data. And what happened to our constitutional right to privacy, to being secure in our papers? Yeah, never mind that. Also, California and New York, they passed legislation that would regulate production quotas. They've been doing that for the past few years. And again, AI is what's tracking all of this. Now, are we moving fast enough? No. And I love the fact that Bob Casey, the senator here from Pennsylvania, is starting, moving in the direction to begin regulating this, to begin what is already invasive, what is already, you know, spreading like wildfire, beginning to try and rein some of this in. I fear too late. And I fear with a Supreme Court that is hell-bent on destroying any ability of citizens to oversee corporate America, that this goes by the wayside because of the Supreme Court. But we have to fight this because the AI tsunami is coming. And we're not prepared for it. You know, I've read a lot about the era of the Industrial Revolution and how technology just made lives of working people incredibly desperate. And all of these technological advances throughout history have been for the benefit overall, but have harmed working people the most. It's always the person who lost the job at the buggy whip factory or at the vacuum tube factory. Or, you know, the truck drivers who are going to lose their job because of self-driving trucks. It's always working people who take it on the chin. And there's rarely ever anything that helps them or makes them whole. And this is the world that we're in. This is, again, all of the my team wins, your team loses, politics stuff that's being thrown at us is not as important as being able to put food on the table and ensuring your children get fed. This is what I'm talking about. This big picture stuff that, you know, see the elephant, because all we're getting is the elephant's backside. And a lot of it's just a bunch of you-know-what dumping out on us. So the question is, how do we rein some of this stuff in? And I say it's about having the conversations I had with people today. It's about talking about issues. It's about talking about organizing and using the labor movement as that vehicle that reunites us back to the public square, that reunites us on common values, instead of continuing to, well, shred us and tear us apart We should find the things that bring us together. And I think, I got to think.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
CBS News Brief. On I-55 in Illinois, 75 miles north of St. Louis, a dust storm leads to a deadly chain reaction crash.
It was super windy, some dust, and then it was getting progressively worse. And I looked up and I go, is that smoke? And the next thing I know, everything just comes to a complete standstill.
At least six people have died and some 30 have been taken to hospitals. In the search for two missing teenagers, authorities make a grisly discovery. Seven bodies on a rural property near the town of Henrietta. Okmulgee County Sheriff Eddie Rice.
We believe that there's no other threat to the community. And we will notify if we believe that anything else has changed that.
Struggling First Republic Bank is seized by federal regulators and quickly sold to J.P. Morgan Chase. President Biden tries to assure American taxpayers.
Well, depositors are being protected. Shareholders are losing their investments. And critically, taxpayers are not the ones that are on the hook.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinere. Here's what you need to know. A Democratic member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission is stepping down today. 72-year-old Julie Glancy announced on Friday she planned to resign. Glancy was appointed to the newly created bipartisan commission by then-Governor Scott Walker and later reappointed by Governor Evers until 2026. In a statement, Glancy said it's time to make way for someone with a fresh perspective. Governor Evers will now appoint a successor from a list of Democrats who were former local government clerks to serve out the rest of her term. If you write checks, you can protect yourself from thieves by using gel ink pens. State officials are warning of check washing. That's when criminals wash ballpoint pen ink off of checks using certain chemicals. This allows them to put their name on it, cash the check, and take your money. Gel ink soaks into paper, which makes it much harder to remove. I'm Jane Matinere. This is Civic Media News.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
No Wisconsin resident should ever have to be without heat, water, or power. The Keep Wisconsin Warm, Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help.
Are you an experienced industrial painter, drywall finisher, or want to be? Do you want more than a job, but a high-paying career where your interests are well represented, ensuring a safe work environment? The International Union of Painters and Allied Trades of District Council 7 wants you. Bring your knowledge or ask about paid training. Learn more now. Call Tom Coyne, 262-488-4839, 262-488-4839, or go to the union's website, iupatdc7.com.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
TheCourt.com. The high.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some big news coming out of our U.S. Supreme Court. And this has been coming for a while. Look, we've been talking about this Chevron case for a couple of years now. Knowing that this is on the horizon, that undoing what this decision did, basically, you know, gutting our regulatory agencies and our ability to oversee what corporate America does. We knew this was coming, and now the Supreme Court has taken it and one of the liberal justices, so I hate framing it like that, has recused herself because I guess she heard the case at the lower level. So now you're going to have six of the conservative justices and Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor. So I don't see positive here. I don't see that this doesn't go the wrong way. But here to explain exactly what this Chevron deference is, what this case is, and what could come out of this, I've asked our good friend Renato Mariotti to come talk with us. Renato is a former federal prosecutor and the host of the incredible podcast, It's Complicated. We'll get links out on social media how you can check out the It's Complicated podcast. Renato, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure. How you doing?
I'm good. I don't want to get into all the legalese and all the jargon that you guys get yourself all involved in, but this is kind of a big deal because I've been talking about this for a couple of years now with people who are a lot smarter than I am and what this means. This is a big deal, isn't it?
It is. It's actually one of the most significant cases I think we've seen in a long time. Obviously, look, there's, you know, when something happens like a overturning Roe versus Wade, that grabs a lot of attention. But this is something that could have a massive impact on how our government works. You know, a lot of the work that is done by the federal government, as you know, Rick, is not done by our elected representatives, because let's face it, not Congress doesn't get a lot done. But it's actually by regulatory agencies, right? Everything from the FAA to the NLRB to the CDC, all sorts of things that matter to people listening to this program, whether you're in labor and you're concerned about labor relations, or you're concerned about your flights arriving on time, or you're concerned about the safety of the foods that your children eat. That is handled by regulatory agencies. And there's a decision that's been in place since 1984, since I was a little boy, that essentially said that the courts defer to those agencies and how they interpret their own actions, and essentially allows them to put out regulations and have those agencies essentially be deferred to unless there's some clear message by Congress to the contrary. And you know, Rick, Congress doesn't do a lot of bill passing nowadays, or law passing. And so that's given a lot of room for regulation. Of course, right. We all know that what the right wing wants to do, which is turn the clock backwards, so to speak.
No, and this is one of these things where, you know, look, even if you know, legislators did write the perfect bill, they don't know everything. And a lot of times they don't know anything about the kind of things they're passing. So they can't know. This is deferring to people with knowledge, the experts. And I fear we're in a moment, Renato, where knowledge is hated, where smart people are looked down upon. And this kind of thing will be celebrated, because I'm looking at the social media going, we're free. We're going to be free. And I'm going, what are we free from?
Right. It's the same attitude that had people attacking Dr. Fauci and the CDC, right, when they were imposing regulations, has people attacking the SEC when they're trying to regulate the financial markets. It's that same instinct. And it's dangerous because it's married here with a sort of federalist society streak of making it harder for government to do anything effective, right? Which is old school conservatism, sort of like the sort of knee jerk reactionary Fox News anti-woke stuff combined with this right wing, federalist society thing, which the result's going to be, as you and I know, is that the NLRB isn't going to be able to issue guidance. The SEC is not going to be able to regulate our financial markets. The FDA is going to have more trouble making sure our food and drugs are safe. All the things that we all rely on are going to be harder for those agencies to do.
Yeah, but are we surprised by this? I mean, I'm looking at the court now, and I'm, you know, they're, like as you pointed out, they're Federalist Society appointees. That's who they came from. A lot of them, you know, still buy into this original intent stuff. So this is ideologically right in their ballpark. If it's not exactly enumerated in the law, then it doesn't exist and no smart person can ever interpret it, just like you do with the Constitution. You know, there's no interpretation. It has to be written exactly the way it is or it doesn't exist. It's that kind of black and white thinking that I think not just dangerous in everyday civilization, but in regulatory oversight.
Well, people always presume they focused on these sort of high profile hot button issues. But what they don't recognize is when the court changes, the people are focused on things besides courts and judges usually. But what they don't understand is that this is the sort of area, things like this, where who you have in the Supreme Court makes a big difference. Because at the time our nation was founded, there were no regulatory agencies. There was no FTC or FAA or CDC. None of these things existed. That's something that's a creation of a more modern era of our country. And so how and whether you defer to those agencies and how much authority you give them is something that nobody who was thinking back in the 1790s, 1790s was not even in part of their imagination. And so there's a lot of latitude for judges and justices to make law, so to speak, through their rulings. And here's an example of something that I think we take for granted. Okay, 1984 is when the Chevron case was decided. You mentioned Chevron at the beginning. That's what this is all about. 1984, okay? That was, almost 40 years ago now. It's a long time that people have made and have had kind of expectations about how government works. And that may all change because of some Supreme Court justices.
No, and I fully expect it to change. Do you have any hope that this doesn't get overturned?
Yeah, no, I think it's just a matter of how and what it looks like. In other words, it's sort of like Roe versus Wade. Once the court was where it was, I had said as soon as Kavanaugh got put on the court, appointed to the court, I said, this means the end of Roe versus Wade. I'm sorry to report that I was correct about that, but I didn't know at the time whether there'd be an incrementalist sort of rollback of Roe versus Wade, death by a thousand cuts, or whether it was going to all happen at once, which is, of course, what happened. And I don't know here whether there's going to be just a flat out rejection of Chevron deference entirely and sort of basically rolling back the authority of agencies, or whether they sort of modify it a little bit around the edges, that sort of thing. So I think it's really just a matter of how much change there's going
to
be.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to have to wait to find out. I always fear the worst because they've shown me that's what they're willing to do. You brought up the Dobbs decision. There was the Janus decision. They always seem to go toward let's rewrite the 20th century. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Renato Mariotti, former federal prosecutor and host of the It's Complicated podcast. We'll get links out on how you can take a look at his podcast. I got to get your thoughts on what's going on in Florida. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but today DeSantis signed three what he's calling anti-crime bills. And one of them is it would make, child molesters eligible for the death penalty. The Supreme Court's already said that unless someone's died, the death penalty's off the table. But he's pushing this. This being one of those, another one being enhanced, they said enhanced criminal penalties for selling fentanyl or fentanyl analogs that look like candy. And also, this is the one I really want to ask about. They want the Florida Supreme Court to develop a uniform bond schedule. And how do they put it? To forbid a person from being released before his or her first court appearance if charged with a violent or heinous crime. Does that happen?
Not really. It doesn't happen much. It's a pretty rare, it would be a very, very rare circumstance where that's the case. There will be some edge cases, okay? I prosecuted a person, an older lady who was mentally ill who tried to rob a bank. Things like that, but it's pretty rare where something like that's going to happen. I have to say all of that, Rick, seems to me like trying to use and shape the criminal justice system to get more airtime on Fox News. It's really a use
absolutely
of the criminal justice system to score political points. And I just don't think that's the way we should go about criminal justice.
No, when I first saw this story, I go, look who's running for president. Because that's what this really is all about. Now, look, the Supreme Court's not going to allow them to kill child molesters. Although, look, as a parent, I get parental justice. I get that. But not state-sponsored murder. I'm just not there. But this is all that stuff that reeks of Fox News. You know, we're letting the violent criminals walk on the streets. We're, you know, we're catching them and releasing them. And I'm going, you know, everyone I've known who's done this stuff, that's not happening.
You know, criminal justice has been something where, and it's been decade after decade, there's been a politicization of prosecution. And the way that we handle criminal justice in this country should be outside of that. And we've always gotten into trouble when we've tried to use politics to determine whether and how people should be prosecuted for crimes. It's how we ended up with the, quote, war on drugs and over-incarceration, for example. And you know, it's ironic because on Fox News, they're always railing against what they call the Soros prosecutors, Soros-backed prosecutors in their mind, who are pursuing, there's some sort of, quote, woke, I don't even know what that means, agenda. And this is basically them doing what they're trying to criticize others for doing, which is using criminal justice and people's lives, okay, to pursue an agenda. I don't have any I don't have any love for child molesters either. To be very blunt, I prosecuted people who did that, and I've had victims of that in my family. It's absolutely heinous crime. But you know, I think we should let judges decide. Punishments, judges and juries ultimately have a role in punishment, not politicians. I think that's the better way for it.
I'm glad you framed that like that, because, you know, one of the arguments I make is, you know, as you're making these hard, fast, you know, these absolutes, it takes out any part of compassion. It takes apart any bit of you know, the criminal justice system being for rehabilitation. It's all about crime. It's all about punishment and retribution. And I don't know that that's a positive.
Well, you know, it's a challenge, okay? Because I think that criminal punishments are a challenging thing. In certain circumstances, you know, for example, there's a big debate over mandatory minimum sentences, which in general have often resulted in over-incarceration because prosecutors will use those as a tool to put a stiff sentence on someone who may not deserve it. But in certain circumstances where judges are not sentencing, for example, child pornography is an area where the sometimes judges have given too much of a break to people engaging in that. I can see the need for that. But I will just say that I think that the punishment of someone is one of the most serious decisions that a judge can ever make. And it's best made by a judge who sees the person in front of them, who has all the facts and circumstances, not only about that case, but about the person's life, who they're sentencing. And I don't think it's appropriate for us to be using the lives of people to make political points. It's just too important for that.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, here's the thing. On the other side, this is a big winner on the right with the red hat crowd.
Sure.
Because it's you know, we're being tough on crime. When you go, you know, I'm sorry, the death penalty doesn't deter crime. Statistics show it doesn't. It's just about, you know, we're going to exact retribution. And I'm against the death penalty for one reason, and that's it's permanent. There's no oops, we made a mistake. There's no going back and undoing it. Look, are there people who I think deserve it? Absolutely. You know, someone touches my kid, you know, there may be some street justice there, but I'm not in favor of a state-sponsored system that does this, and especially using it for political gain like I think DeSantis is doing.
Well, you know, I the first prosecutor I ever worked for was Pat Fitzgerald, a very famous prosecutor. And he, I think, rather famously made the argument within the Justice Department that his opposition to use of the death penalty by the Justice Department was just the amount of resources it takes. In other words, it takes more resources to prosecute a death penalty case with all the appeals and everything else than it does, you know, far more than it does a sentence of life in prison. And it's just not a good use of prosecutorial resources. Personally, I could see why in certain extreme cases the death penalty might make sense. If Osama bin Laden was caught in U.S. borders, I could understand that. But that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is a politician who sees his poll numbers not where he wants. He's trying to get some free polls, a boost in the polls at the expense of people's lives. And I just think that, like you said, it's a very dangerous thing to be doing.
Yeah, for me in this moment, it reeks of opportunism and desperation. I mean, this seems like that last Hail Mary kind of, hey, I need to save my campaign. What can I do to rile the base and get them around to me? And this is it. So I'm curious, do you think this is going to work? Do you think this will revive the DeSantis campaign since he seems to be taking beatings in other arenas?
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, one thing that's happening, by the way, is the Trump campaign spending all the money that they hoodwinked from their supporters. They're spending it against DeSantis years before the race, right? And I think, you know, the reality is DeSantis is trying to have his cake and eat it too, be on the sidelines, not run for president, while trying to sort of surreptitiously run. It's not working for him. And let's face it, I think the far right wing is pretty captured by Trump right now.
No. At this moment, it's Trump's to lose. And we'll see how that plays out. But Renato, as always, I appreciate the insight and your expertise. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our good friend Renato Mariotti. Make sure you check out the podcast. It's complicated. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1886. That was the day that workers throughout the United States walked off their jobs in a coordinated, planned effort and demanded the 8-hour day. What made this strike truly revolutionary was that the workers were not asking for reduced pay for reduced hours. They wanted their pay level to stay the same. Chicago labor activist Alan Parsons explained this that March for the Chicago Daily News, saying, quote, "The movement to reduce the work hours is intended by its projectors to give a peaceful solution to the difficulties between capitalists and laborers. I have always held that there were two ways to settle this trouble, either by peaceable means or violent methods. Reduced hours, or 8 hours, is the peace offering. Fewer hours mean more pay. Reduced hours is only the measure of economic reform which consults the interests of the laborers as producers, which can only be acquired by possessing and consuming a larger share of their own project. This would diminish the profits of the exploiters." That first day of May, tens of thousands took to the streets in Chicago, and an estimated 300,000 protested across the nation, marching for the 8-hour day. The strike met with early success, but then 3 days later, an unknown person threw a bomb at a workers' rally in Chicago's Haymarket Square. The government crackdown against the 8-hour movement was quick and harsh. 8 men stood trial in Chicago for the bombing. 4 were martyred despite a lack of evidence tying them to the bomb. But the idea of the 8-hour day was not so easily crushed. It spread not only in the United States, but across the world. Now, more than a century later, May Day, this day is the International Workers' Holiday. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I go back to the whole DeSantis thing and the death penalty. And look, you know, conservatives have always used that as their rallying cry. See how tough I am? Look at me be tough on crime. And I look at this DeSantis thing, and honestly, the first thing I thought of as I'm reading through this, and I saw a couple of the videos of his speech with the big American flag behind him like he's Patton or something. I'm going, you know, tell me you're running for president without telling me you're running for president. This is riling the base up. This is trying to get them, say he's Mr. Law and Order. He'll crush those others. And the problem with a guy like this is eventually you or me or, well, us become the others. You know, how far down this path until it's your kids or mine or us between the Buford T. Justices of the world, you know, with the iron fist of the law come down on top of us. Now, as I said, I'm against the idea of the death penalty. There's a bunch of reasons, but the number one is, you know, you know, it's not foolproof. We have executed innocent people, and there's no going back on that. And as a working class guy myself, if something were to happen in my life, who knows? I know I don't have the resources to defend myself. And as I think Renato pointed out, it's a matter of resources on the state side as well, because they spend a lot of money, but they don't seem to run out of it as fast as an average working class person. I look at the difference between races in using the death penalty. That's a problem. There's a lot of inequities in the system that you go, I don't know. I'm not there. And I know if it were you or your family, you would be, and this is where I come back to, if it's my kids, I understand vigilante justice. I do. I'm not advocating for it. I'm not suggesting you go do it, but I understand it. That should not be how we run our government. And, you know, I've had these conversations for a very long time on this topic, and my mind has not changed. Also, there is the fact that spending life in jail is no picnic. Ask the insurrectionists. Ask Marjorie Trainwreck Greene and Go-Go Gohmert and the rest of them who go visit their heroes in jail in Washington how wonderful the jail system is. And this, again, goes back to that image that people have of, you know, these January 6th insurrectionists, they believed, you know, jail was like Club Med. You got, you know, three meals in a cot and I can watch cable TV and I can work out all day long. And it's utopia. You know, it's a good thing. Too good. We need bread and water and misery. Well, they're now in jail and going, it wasn't what they thought it was. You know, and look, our media structure, they're falling for it because they were fawning all over DeSantis in his speech, and he got what he wanted out of it. He got a lot of attention. Look at me being presidential. Look at me with the big giant flag behind me and how wonderful I am. And look, and I can make quips, you know, like the old Gipper about how tough we're going to be. Yeah, our media being our media because it's all about the clicks, man. And speaking about all about the click, CNN doing what CNN does. Evidently, they announced that Donald Trump's going to participate in a town hall next week in New Hampshire. And thanks for ruining my birthday on May 10th, my birthday. The CNN's going to have Caitlin Collins, the anchor of CNN This Morning, hosting this this town hall, I guess, of Republicans and undeclared voters, they're saying. And all this is going to be is an hour or two of Trump just rambling on about, you know, whatever it is he wants to ramble on. It's like a giant commercial. But they do it because, well, it's about the money. They are now coming around to the Rupert Murdoch. Trump is good for business. Or the Les Moonves. You know, I know he's bad for democracy, but he's good for CBS. He's good for our bottom line. And I keep coming back to how do we break this cycle? Because the outrage that they keep shoveling down our throats keeps us from solving any real problems. The media was all abuzz over DeSantis today. Did we talk about anything that's going to make your life better? Did we talk about anything that's going to help your kids go to college or any of that? See, I believe government is the tool that we use collectively to do the things we can't do individually. We want to educate our children. We want to send them to college. We want to, you know, invest. We want infrastructure. We want military. We want health care. These are things that we should be fighting for. And yet all we're doing, and thanks to the least among us, we're focused on the show, on the circus, on what's tearing us apart. And it's bread and circus. Or as I say, you know, reality TV and Cheetos. And that's what our politics have turned into. A sad reality TV show. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha.